This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
That's me. Welcome, welcome. Thanks, everybody, for being here today. A very entertaining, no, informative, I think, is the better word for today's program. We are going to be giving out free legal information from three local attorneys of all specialties. Hopefully you have your stuff. But we are going to give a couple disclaimers, though. Please, no private information. We don't need to know your name and phone number and where you live, or the name and phone number of whomever might be on the other side of your interest. Please remember when calling in that your question does not establish attorney-client privilege, and don't make any official decisions where you sign papers or pay money from this. But I think you'll find it to be very entertaining. There's certainly many people out there who should be able to use this free legal information from our three guests. So hopefully that didn't turn anybody off to start the hour. Let me check all those microphones, and we'll go ladies first from over by the window. Jessica Phillips, how are you?
Doing well, thank you.
See, try that one more time.
I'm doing great. Thanks, Rick.
There you go. Sometimes I have to turn the buttons on to actually make them work. Jennifer McKeever, how are you, ma'am?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Rick.
I appreciate everyone being here. And Bob Byrne.
How's it going, Rick?
I'm doing well. Thank the three of you for coming in here. We did determine beforehand I am not being billed by the minute, and I appreciate that. All right, so we are going to give out the phone numbers right away for those folks who'd like to call in. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. For some free legal information throughout the hour today. Please take advantage of that. Our guest, again, Jessica Phillips from Payne Hodes. Is that the proper pronunciation?
Yes, Payne and Hodes.
Payne and Hodes. Jen McKeever from Jones and Green.
Good morning.
Bob Byrne from Martin and Wren Law.
Yeah, we don't have the and, so we're progressive, so we just are Martin Wren.
Martin Wren. So obviously neither of them had grammar teachers as parents.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
When I was growing up, my mother at the time was the English teacher for 10th grade, and then as I got older, she switched to substitute teacher, and let me tell you, that's not any fun to have your mother be the substitute teacher for the day. let me thank Dixon Disposal for allowing us to be on air today. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce household garbage and purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep the planet green for years to come, because when Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. Dial them at 978-2111. Find them online at DixonDisposal.com. And let's thank those folks in Lovingston on the 94.7 for tuning in. So call in with your question from our guests today, Jennifer McKeever, Bob Byrne, Jessica Phillips, three local attorneys giving information for your specific question. I had friends over last night, and I said, okay, guys, we have attorneys coming in tomorrow. Does anyone have any questions that they would like to start the hour? You can also, by the way, send us an instant message at WNRN Studio on the AOL site. So one of the questions that I received is about an employment relationship, employee, ex-employee, and COBRA insurance. So I'm not sure who wants to take this on. An ex-employee relationship with a company for COBRA, can the business drop the employee for anything other than non-payment, such as if the employee takes the employer to court for a civil or criminal lawsuit, can the employer use that as a reason to drop them from the COBRA health system? Who's going? All right, don't
really
all jump
question,
up at
Rick.
Once.
Something that no doubt I would have to research further into the statute regulations about, but maybe Jessica or Bob know.
Again, there's no one here who's going to sign any papers or you know go spend any particular money. But where do you start? Is this something? Can they, you know, drop for this bit of action?
I think with Jennifer, I would have to research it, but my gut instinct would tell me no, that, you know, that would be, you know, could be seen as a sort of retaliatory move. And I do not do COBRA work, but I believe that there's a pretty, pretty lengthy set of federal guidelines that tell employers what they can and cannot do. And I just sort of my lawyer's gut instinct would tell me that they would not be permitted to do that. But that's about as far as I can go with that question.
Yeah, usually in the employment context, I'm the same way. That's a very specific question. But there's always a red flag that comes up in the employer context if somebody is trying to essentially take action against an employee because of the employee's exercise of a legal right. And so I think that Jessica's instincts are dead on, and I would certainly caution against that.
All right. Somebody else wants to dial in with your question or send us the lawsuit? The lawsuit. Don't send me a lawsuit, please. Do not send me any lawsuits. However, you can send us an instant message through WNRN Studio, or you can call in. The local line is 979-0919. Toll-free is 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS for our free legal information today from Bob Byrne, Jennifer McKeever, Jessica Phillips, all local Charlottesville area attorneys. Here's one that I got through the instant message. I had my car towed from a parking lot. It was towed because we weren't at the business where the parking lot was for. Later that day, I see my car on a flatbed tow truck just randomly parked on the side of the road. Is that legal? Shouldn't the driver have taken my car to a secure place?
Another great question, Rick.
Let me tell you, the program will be full of great questions. What we're waiting for is the free, great legal information.
Well, I think, yes, I think that the tow truck driver, you know, towing is always a hot button issue here in Charlottesville because there are so many places that you can't park and that tow truck drivers seem to be around all the time. I think that the tow truck driver has to take your car to a secure place, but I guess the question is, you know, what are they doing there? Did they have to stop and do a quick errand? Did they have to, you know, why are they sitting on the side of the road with your car? And if it eventually gets to a secure place and there's nothing that's been damaged to your car and it's in the same condition that it was when it was picked up, I don't know that I could find anything that the tow truck driver did wrong. Now, if the tow truck driver veers from taking your car where he's supposed to take it and something happens because of that, you know, maybe that's a whole different scenario. But based on that information, I don't know. As long as it gets to the secure place, you're probably fine.
And what happens, I mean, what is, if something happens to the car, even if he's on doing an errand, what's up with that? I mean, can something happen if he says, well, I just pulled over for an errand?
I think one thing that would come up there is let's say that there were damages that justified a lawsuit. If you filed suit against the employer would probably say, and against the employer would probably say that the employee was on a frolic and detour, it's called, where basically they depart from the legitimate track that they're on for their particular mission. And if they do that, then the employer can say, well, they're outside the scope of their agency. We're not responsible for that. So that's one of the issues that would pop up there. you'd have to have a question of who are the proper parties. But I think one of the issues that, that you routinely see, at least I see a lot in the legal system, is you have to have someone, first of all, violate some sort of a legal duty, which is liability, civil liability. But then you also have to have damages. You have to be out of pocket something, generally speaking, in order to justify a lawsuit. So if it's if maybe they just scratched it, you probably don't want to pay an attorney $150 or $200 an hour to try to get the paint repaired, that you could just take it to a place and pay a couple hundred dollars and get the same result at the end, but save a whole lot more money.
Good to know, because you're right. As in many places in Charlottesville, you can get your car towed by parking in an illegal spot, as I've learned in the past. But there are so many illegal spots. It's like, where am I supposed to go? It seems like that there are only illegal spots in town sometimes. All right, somebody called in and hung up before we could get to them. Dial us back, 979-0919. Questions with our attorneys today. That was Bob Byrne from Martin Rand Law, Jessica Phillips from Payne and Hodes. Jennifer McKeever is with Jones and Green. We'd love to have your questions. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS today. Again, disclaimers. By calling in does not establish an attorney-client privilege. And please don't give us deep personal advice. We don't need to know your name, address, and phone number for your questions today. You know, I had a question last night, again, from the folks who were over. Is there any sort of issue when a couple, married couple, or pre-married couple might need a prenuptial agreement? I mean, you always hear about that from the wealthier folks, the celebrities, et cetera. But the average individual, is there some sort of suggestion that you might make in terms of this is often overlooked as to why the nuptial agreement might be helpful later in life?
I stay away from this area of the law as much as possible, so I'd have to defer this question to Jennifer and Bob.
Jennifer, this is all you, because I try to avoid domestic relations at all costs.
I think a prenuptial agreement is can be very handy for people who are not wealthy. If you have earned something, if you have an IRA or a 401k or some sort of asset that maybe isn't significant, but that you would like to keep separate from your marital property. And that's really how you have to look at it. When you are entering into the marriage relationship, you then create marital property once you're married. And typically what we do is mingle the separate and marital property. For example, we would put monies from what we earn, wages, for example, into our 401k that is separate. And so if we can get an idea, for example, when you start your marriage, what you want to keep separate, and that makes it honestly easier to trace back if in the unlikely event that you might separate or divorce.
The unlikely, which I believe
is
50% or so.
Exactly.
50%. What are the specialties that each of you feel comfortable talking about today? I mean, doesn't mean that we won't get a question or that I, Jessica, you immediately said I try and stay away from this as best possible. But Bob, your sort of specialties?
Primarily business litigation. So if two businesses are battling it out, I'm usually in the mix and handle a lot of breach of contract disputes, fiduciary duty matters.
I don't even know what that means. Fiduciary.
Okay, fiduciaries. If somebody works for An attorney, for instance, it's what's called a confidential relationship. So you place a special trust in me. And in doing so, I owe you what are called fiduciary duties. So there's the duty of loyalty. I have to give you my 100% complete loyalty. There's a duty of care. I have to act with diligence and act with the best efforts that I can muster. All sorts of duties of disclosure and everything else. So I handle cases where you'll have fiduciaries, those people who are in those positions, executors, attorneys, not really attorneys so much, but executors, administrators, and folks who work for businesses, and they breach those duties. They pocket some money. Bernie Madoff, classic example of a breach of fiduciary duty. And I also do some plaintiff's personal injury work. So all of the commercial litigation, I think over time, my practice has narrowed down. I've had a case with Jennifer, a domestic relations case, and you get a couple of those under your belt. You know whether that's something you're interested in or not. It does take a special person, and Jen's very good at that.
Well, then let's move over to Jennifer McKeever in terms of what your specialty that might catch the attention of a caller.
I call myself a general civil litigator, basically somebody who does litigation, means somebody who goes to court. I also do a lot of negotiation, but it's, if you come to me, it's not necessarily that you're going to go to court, but that you're trying to solve a problem with some civil issue. I emphasize family law, real estate, landlord-tenant issues, and I do draft some contracts. I do some business creation, although sometimes I hand those over to Bob Martin Wren. That's generally what I do: some real estate, some family law, and some contracts.
Jessica, I'm going to come back to you in just a second because we have a caller.
Okay.
All right, caller, how are you?
Hi, good morning. I'm fine, thank you.
Good morning.
Your chat about automobile towing brought to mind a recent experience I had I wanted to ask about. I have had my disabled vehicle towed on my own volition from my apartment parking lot to a repair shop. And the towing fee for that distance was about $50, let's say. But recently I had my car towed involuntarily because it was parked contrary to the rules of the apartment complex. And the car was towed to the tow company's storage area, which was approximately the same distance. But because the towing company cited an agreement, a contract his company had with the apartment complex, he was able to charge me approximately $175 for the tow. Now, that's far more than a $50 tow, so I get the feeling that the towing charge, the contract, is almost punitive to the residents of the apartment complex. Are apartment complex management companies privileged to enter in a contract with a towing company where their rates would be that excessive? Is that a legal position to have, or do I have some recourse or complaint to the apartment management complex? That is my question.
All right, who wants to jump on that?
One question I would have right off the top is, why was your car towed? That you said that it was against some apartment regulation, but if you have if you are displaying handicap tags or disabled tags or a hanging tag, or you have the plates, I'd be interested in hearing what the parking regulations are, because there are numerous regulations that deal with the Fair Housing Act, both on the state and federal level, plus the Americans with Disabilities Act. And if the parking restriction that was in place runs afoul of those, then you might be in a situation where there's recourse against the apartment complex. I mean, if they have a parking policy that violates the law, you can probably bring that right back to them and say that you shouldn't have been towed in the first place and that you shouldn't be responsible for this. That's not really the question that you asked, but that's kind of a way to resolve this, and so I'd probably be interested in learning more about that.
Caller, did you catch that?
It's a little difficult to hear, but I think I heard into what he's asking. No, in my case, it had nothing to do with handicap parking or privileges. I was parked in what amounted to a no parking zone, so I was in clear violation of their policies, which is you got to be in an appropriate space. But actually, I'm a victim twice because on a previous occasion, I had purchased my annual sticker for the license plate. I don't recall exactly what it is. Maybe it's personal property tax or maybe it's just your state fee. But I was a delinquent in putting the sticker on my license plate. So my tags essentially were expired. And according to the rules of the parking lot, your vehicles have to be paid up to date and so indicated with all the proper decals. My car was towed because my stickers had expired. I'd actually paid, but that's another issue. But my vehicle was not deemed legally paid, so it was towed. But I'm not going to dispute their rules. They have their rules, and I understand them, and I could argue those. But the point I'm asking about today is the fees that the towing company charged, they were excessive, in my opinion, and punitive, in my judgment, as well. Can you address the privilege the management company has to allow a towing company to charge such an exorbitant fee for their services?
Yeah, that's a really tough situation because if you're trying to invalidate a contract or a policy, generally it has to conflict with some rule of public policy, so some sort of statute or some common law notion of not just fairness, but it has to be what's called unconscionable, and payment, the amount of payment by itself usually is not grounds unless it's so large and so extensive that it is what the law says shocks the conscience, and that's certainly a steep amount, and it's a large penalty. I think you'd probably have a tough time trying to get that invalidated through the courts.
All right. Thanks for the call. 11:23 here on WNRN's Wake Up Call. Call us in with your question for some free legal information. Our guests today, Jennifer McKeever, Bob Byrne, Jessica Phillips. I see the phone line ringing now. Let me give you Market of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly cloudy today, 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs in the upper 80s. Mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms tonight. Lows in the mid-60s. And then mostly sunny tomorrow. Highs in the mid-80s. Right now, it's pretty nice out there. 82 in the valley, 82 in Lynchburg, 82 in Richmond. And guess what? 82 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me thank Wolf Trap for their support at WNRN, Wolf Trap National Park for the Performing Arts, presenting John Prine live in concert on Friday, August 26th, an American folk troubadour with special guest Richard Thompson. That's John Prine, singer, songer, and critically acclaimed poet. Tickets on sale at wolftrap.org. Call them 877-WOLF-TRAP. That's John Prine live at Wolf Trap, where the arts come out to play. All right, let's take another call. Hi, caller. Your question for our guests.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
I am a proprietor of a small web development company. I occasionally give jobs to other freelancers, but I take responsibility for all of my work. I'm not an LLC, and I've been in business now for 3 or 4 years, and I'm not sure if exploring becoming an LLC is important to my business.
I think Bob would be a really good person to answer that question.
I like how everyone sort of pushes it off on somebody else.
I mean, I'm happy to answer it, but I definitely think Bob has the expertise in this area.
Why don't you take the first?
You know, I can hardly hear, so I think I'll take my answer off air.
All right, okay. Thanks.
I think, first of all, LLC is a statutory creation, so all it's governed exactly by what the General Assembly has created in the statute. How it's basically a two-fold, in my opinion, good thing. One is it can protect you from liability, reaching your personal assets. So if your company has an LLC, then, you know, for example, if your home is owned by your own name and not your business name, then your home may not be attached to any lawsuits in the future if there's some debt associated with the business. So I like that part of the LLC, and I'll let Bob continue on with that.
Yeah, but I would think that the benefits would outweigh the costs. It's a fairly low transactional cost to set one up. One of the benefits of an LLC is that it's a tax-through entity, so you can take the tax benefits of the LLC, such as deductions, losses, etc., and apply them to yourself, which is always great. But as Jen said, you can't really emphasize the value of limited liability, because what you could be in a situation where, let's say that you get a huge client come in the door. You have a huge contract that you're working on, and you are doing the web hosting, the web development, and all the web design work. The site crashes because of some error that you made. And let's say that it's an e-commerce site, and they lose tens of thousands of dollars of business during the time that the site is down. In that situation, that tens of thousands of dollars, there's a pretty good chance they're going to come looking to you. And if you're in a situation where you're working out of your basement, and this is something that you're just doing as a sole proprietor, there's a possibility that your personal assets, I mean, there's a very strong possibility that your personal assets are going to be taken as a result of any suit that's brought. So given the low costs that are involved in the enormous security and protection that it offers, it's hard not to justify taking that step.
All right. That sounded like a very important question for somebody who's doing work as a business, but a different type of business legally. I appreciate that. Good call. Good answers. Our guest today, that was Bob Byrne from Martin Wren, Jennifer McKeever from Jones & Green. We also have Jessica Phillips, who's fighting the microphone over there with Payne and HOTUS. Call us up with your question, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Jennifer?
Yes, I wanted to add something to the limited liability company question, which is the State Corporation Commission website is incredibly handy. So if you are starting a business in this Commonwealth, go to the State Corporation Commission website. And they have an e-filing system that I just used for the first time the other day. It's pretty new, and it's actually really handy and very useful. To start an LLC is very there. Just like what Bob said, it does not cost very much to start an LLC.
Let me take a moment and thank L. Oppelman for their support today. L. Oppelman's Central Virginia's Complete Music Headquarters, continuously operated since 1890. At 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department is now featuring acoustic guitars, banjos, mandolins, and violins, as well as electric guitar packages from Fender and Peavey. Also, complete drum sets. It's L. Oppelman's, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg, and at loppelman.com. Phone lines open, 979-0919, 1-877, WNRN Rocks. Jessica, I didn't get to you because of the phone call. Your specialty is criminal law, correct?
Yes, one of them. I would say I'm similar to Jennifer. I have a kind of a general litigation practice, but within that, a little bit different from her. I do criminal defense work of all varieties, and I also do some general civil litigation, landlord-tenant contract collections, and also real estate closings, and more. In this economy, more dealing with foreclosure, short sales, and that types of things. So those are, I guess, sort of the three things that I, three areas that I'm in the most.
All right. Dial up and take advantage of that. Landlord-tenant and other real estate questions. And just going to court. I mean, hey, if you're going to court, you probably have a question in terms of some free legal information. Take advantage of it while you can with our guest today. All right, we got another call. Caller, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm well. A question for our group.
Yes, just a general question about a no-compete clause in the workplace. Are those things, I understand they're pretty binding, but I just wanted to hear it from one of you guys to see if that's true.
All right. Who's going to take that on?
Looks like I am. There's been a trend in Virginia to that's the one type of contract that the courts basically have shown a willingness to invalidate. And there's pretty much three grounds that they look to. Number one, the geographical scope. How wide of an area is the restriction imposed on you? The type of duties that are going to be restricted, are they going basically beyond the sole focus of what it is that you did for them, and also the time. I don't think that the courts have upheld one that's lasted for longer than 2 years. So those three features kind of interplay with one another, and if one is too much, then the others better be very low. I guess if one is high, they kind of seesaw with one another. But the courts have, they did invalidate a number of those over the past several years.
All right. Caller, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I think it's got it covered pretty good. They didn't specify any type of geographical area or anything like that. So it's kind of an open question, but I think that's pretty much all I need to know.
All right. Good job. Thanks, folks.
Thanks.
All right, dial us up with your question, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. Let me take a moment and remind you, please don't make any official decisions based on this free information today. And calling in with a question does not establish an attorney-client relationship. However, this is your opportunity to ask a question and get some free legal information from our guests. Jennifer McKeever at Jones & Green, Jessica Phillips at Payne & Hodes, Bob Byrne from Martin Wren Law. Dial us up, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. Jessica, I got an instant message here. It seems to fit into the landlord-tenant thing. Previous owner of my current resident wants to either sell me the house and additional parcel behind my property or donate it to Habitat for Humanity. What rights do I have aside from being strong-armed to purchase the property?
Well, I think in order to answer that question, I would need a lot more information. I don't know what the current, relationship is that this person has. Do they have a lease? Do they have? Is that expired? Is it ongoing? What kind of agreement is being contemplated in terms of purchasing the property? It's your right to decide whether or not you want to purchase the property and the parcel. And I think that like I said, I can't really give any answer on that unless I know a whole lot more information. And that's a lot of times, you know, what happens when someone calls me up is they ask me a question like that, and I ask them 20 questions, you know, to try to get the information that I need to say what is important and what are the critical facts that are going to be able to so that I can give a person good advice, you know, once we've established that relationship.
Take a moment, though, and just do what I would – it may not be this particular situation, but if someone were in a current lease or if the lease was about to expire or recently expired.
Well, if someone's in a lease and that lease is about to expire and the owner wants to – the owner says, I don't want to renew your lease and I want to either sell you the property or I'm going to donate the property, that is the owner's right to make that decision once that lease has expired. I think that if I was that person, I would probably consult an attorney and say, you know, here's the position that I'm in. Here's, yes, I may want to purchase the property, but here's the terms on which I can purchase it, because you're going to need to get an attorney involved if you're going to set up that kind of agreement. If you're going to purchase the property, of course, you're going to need to have a contract. So while I don't think the tenant could, you know, force the property owner to allow them to stay or enter into a new agreement if that agreement is expired, I think there's a lot of opportunity there for dialogue with the owner to figure out, you know, I want this property, you want to sell it, how can we come to an agreement? And that's a lot of time, you know, we talk about going to court a lot, but I think Jennifer made a good point when she said that she tries to help people solve their problems before they go to court. And I think attorneys are in a unique position to do that. And I try to do that as much as possible, even though I enjoy going to court. And that's why I became an attorney. So much more can be done, can be resolved to where both parties are happy before you get to that point. So if that person can open in dialogue with you, you can maybe contact the owner and say, this is what we want. How can we make everyone happy? I think an attorney should do that, and that's what I try to do.
You like going to court?
Yes.
What, tell me more about that for a second. I have a question from someone who called in but didn't want to be online. But what is it about going to court?
I just like the I've never been nervous about public speaking, so I guess that's the first thing, is you have to be confident about speaking and about, you know, arguing and making your point. And I just like the energy. I like speaking on my feet, having to come up with solutions quickly. You know, when I'm in court and I'm arguing and the judge says, wait a minute, what do you think about, you know, this argument or this case that the other side is making? I just like that. It's what I've kind of always knew I wanted to do. So I do enjoy that part of it. And I think if you decide to go to law school at some point, you make that decision. If you're going to be a lawyer and you're going to practice, you decide, okay, I'm going to be a transactional lawyer where I do business deals and I'm at my desk and I, you know, talk to people on the phone, or I'm going to be in court, because I think there's personalities that are suited for both.
11:38 here on the Wake Up Call. Dial us up with your question. Our guest today, Jessica Phillips from Payne & Hodes, just speaking. Bob Byrne from Martin Wren, Jen McKeever from Jones & Green, all in the local area. Again, some free legal information with your question. I see the phone ringing now. Let me take a moment and do this.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, this week, more winners from The Hook's 2011 Fiction Contest. A pharmacist with a mistress and a Vicodin problem, and three boys lost on a snowy mountain with the search called off. Two short story winners with time left for summer reading. And a documentary explores last summer's tragedy at the Virginia Quarterly Review. and the suicide blamed on bullying. And designers revealed the planned look for Trader Joe's and the Stonefield Center. The Hook, a new release party every Thursday. And let me thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, where you are encouraged to be kind, have fun, and do the right thing. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road here in Charlottesville. They have three Richmond locations. Online, it's brms.com. And we always want to take a moment and thank everyone for listening and those who support what we do and make it possible. We cannot bring you the music you love without the support of listeners like Ann Evans, Matt Hodges, and Shane Harrison, who donated in the Spring Fund Drive, or businesses like Mockingbird or Price Hyundai. If you appreciate WNRN's contributions to your life, then show your support by calling in to the next Fund Drive this September. All right, back to our guests. Dial us up on the phone, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is toll-free. The WNRN studio is the instant message online. All right, I'm going to do my best to make this sensible. Maybe it makes more sense to y'all. This is someone who called in with a question who didn't want to come online. All right, can a county attorney ignore a summons to send out money for a warrant in debt? What recourse can that person use? A warrant in debt on judgment property.
That seems like it needs a lot more.
Yes.
Information.
I'll sort of try to dissect it down and
swing
and
it.
Make some generalizations. First of all, a common misconception that people have when they sue someone for money, and that's what a warrant in debt is when you sue someone for money, is that when the judge says, okay, you're right, this person owes you $500, is that the judge at that point is going to say, pay them right now. That is not how it works. You may have a judgment that Joe owes you $500, but the judge does not make that person pay you right away, and in fact really does nothing right then and there to make that person pay you. You then have to take that judgment and try to enforce it through the collections process, and there are separate processes that you have to go through to do that. There's garnishing someone's wages. There's trying to seize property that they own and have it sold. You can docket the judgment so that if they try to sell their house, the judgment has to be paid off through that sale. But it's not an automatic process, and oftentimes you can expend more money trying to pay an attorney to enforce your judgment or collect your judgment than your judgment is actually worth. And a lot of people don't realize that. They think that magically you just get paid right away, and some people... So there's lots of unpaid judgments sitting out there for one reason or another. I would need more information to know how we get to the county attorney part of this question, because I'm not sure how that comes into play. But I think does someone have to pay a judgment just because it's out there? No. I think there's got to be enforcement measures taken, like I was talking about, through collections, and I would need a lot more information to know how the county attorney is coming into play and what the argument is. Now, if we're talking about a judgment against a county, I think that there are – I don't know too many counties that are going to let a judgment sit unpaid. That doesn't seem to be very good municipal practice, and I think the Board of Supervisors or whatever the governing body is at the county has to take that up and decide what to do with it. But that's about all I can say without some more information.
All right. Well, caller, we're still here answering the phones if you want to call up, and Jen can answer your call and give us a little more information if you'd like. That's 979-0919. That's 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. And WNRN Studio is the instant message site at AOL. 11:44 on the wake-up call with our guests today, Jessica Phillips, Jennifer McKeever, Bob Byrne, giving out some free legal information for your questions. Well, let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Graphics. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, online, brgtshirts.com. All right, here's another question that we got. I see the phone ringing, so let's see what we can do with this. Landlord refused return of security deposit, listing a laundry list of needed repairs. The list was sent registered mail after I contacted them with a certified letter requesting reasons why security deposit was not returned. The list included numerous minor items of little consequence. However, the landlord indicated that the carpeting needed replacement due to wear and dirt. I'd rented there for 5 years, and the carpeting was old and soiled at the outset. Security deposit was $625, replacement of carpeting $835. Do I have grounds for complaint or case?
Just to be more general about it, the security deposits are governed by the lease. There are two different laws governing return of security deposit, and it kind of depends whether it's a Virginia landlord, Virginia Residential Landlord Tenant Act house or not. It doesn't mean that. The first rule of security deposits is reasonable wear and tear is not something that can be deducted from your security deposit. That's just. However, that is incredibly vague, and frequent. Frequently up for some debate in court. Living someplace 5 years, reasonable wear and tear is probably more broadly defined than narrowly defined because you've lived there so long. This is a tricky situation. I frequently, you go to an attorney and they charge you $200 an hour for this advice or some initial consultation fee for this information, and you have to weigh what value does this have for you, because you can certainly contest in court the charges. It's kind of a tedious process. Was that reasonable wear and tear? And then the court will decide yes or no, that was reasonable wear and tear. And so, you subtract it $45 by $45, and then you finally come up to, maybe to a number. However, that's in court. It may be worthwhile, just like Jessica mentioned earlier, to have a conversation with a lawyer who can then, interact with the landlord to say, this is what the statute says, this is what the law is, let's try to work something out here. And reasonable wear and tear is just a very general standard, but a pretty tedious process. But, if the landlord knows their rights, because they are supposed to send you an itemized list of the deductions that they made, if it's under the VRLTA, within 45 days after your lease terminates. So the landlord is within its rights to make those deductions, but it's up to you to contest it. But it's also up to them to enforce it or to collect the balance. For example, you said the deposit was $625, and they're saying that you owe $800. So there is a balance there, a difference there. I would talk to an attorney before I paid any balances.
All right. Thanks for the call. Jennifer, thank you for the information. That's Jennifer McKeever with Jones & Green. And we have another caller who's coming on air. Caller, how are you?
All right. How y'all doing this morning?
Thanks for hanging on. Question for our attorneys.
Yes, I'm contemplating bankruptcy. What I was wondering was, am I going to be able to keep any of my vehicles or not? And basically the reason I'm thinking about this is because I own a double wide, and the loan probably was done. I was really not, should have never been able to get the loan, in my opinion. I'm paying too much on the house, and I can't keep up with the current economy, so I'm contemplating bankruptcy. I don't know what else to do to try to hang on to my house. So.
All right, let's see what the folks have to say. I'm gonna hang up and let you listen on the radio, okay?
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
5 minutes before we came on, we all said, what are we going to do if somebody asks a bankruptcy question? Because none of us actually practice bankruptcy. But I do know, doing some foreclosure work and short sale work, I know a little bit. First, I would say bankruptcy is a very specific, very detailed practice, and there are lots of good bankruptcy attorneys in town. And I would find one and call them right away, because it's something that if you do bankruptcy, that's probably all you do. And that's the type of practice that it is. There are, and I'm just speaking generally, there are going to be some things that you are going to be able to, when you meet with the attorney, there are going to be some, exceptions that you can claim, for certain things. And I think the attorney is going to talk with you about your residence, your home, to see what's going to be the best thing for you to do with that. Or do you want to try to keep it or do something else with it, negotiate with your lender to try to, get a modification or something like that. I cannot answer anything about the vehicles, because I just don't know that much specific information. If someone else here can, go right ahead. But I would say talk to a bankruptcy attorney, because they're going to be the best resource for that information.
Anybody else want to take that on?
I my understanding is that there is an exemption for some vehicles, but it's up to a certain amount. So, and that amount is actually quite low. So if your car is worth, for example, $10,000, and it's probably not exemptable, which is not a word, but
I know what you meant.
Okay, thank you, Bob. But yeah, so there is hope there, and that's why you should consult with a bankruptcy attorney right away.
Thank you for the call. 11:52 on the wake-up call. We do have time for another call or two on our show of Ask the Attorneys for some free legal information. Jessica Phillips, Bob Byrne, Jennifer McKeever. A reminder, please don't make any official binding decisions based on your free advice today. And once again, calling in and asking a question does not establish an attorney-client relationship. But attorney-client relationships can be established if you make an appointment and go see an attorney during regular billable hours. Let me thank the backyard for letting us have the program today. UVA Corner's Culinary Secret at the end of Valleywood Avenue, welcoming back the students. Backyard has a seasonal menu with daily specials and a rotating list of beers on tap. Backyard is now open on Sundays, serving brunch, and then a pub food menu until close. For more information, you can call them at 202-8215, thebackyarduva.com. You can also find them on Facebook. And my man Drew Thompson just walked in the door. He'll be on air at noon for Les Temps Perdue, best of 80s and 90s alternative music. He'll have music from Blondie, XTC, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and brought to you in part by Caliente. Requests always welcome on Les Temps Perdue. All right, here's a question that another caller didn't want their voice on air. Had contract with tenant on a rental house. Damages were done by the tenant, and formal judgment was made for the tenant to pay the renter. The tenant paid a very small amount 2.5 years ago, but the renter can't track down the old tenants down anymore. What should we do?
You have to have an address, Rick. You have to be able to find the tenant, the former tenant, to be able to get to proceed with any enforcement actions.
Is there a way to find? Do you have suggestions on how to instead of Googling a name or trying to find them on Facebook? Do you have any other suggestions as to how someone might backyard their way in?
There are some programs that are available, and we have There's one, for instance, called Accurint. It's a web program that we use to try to track folks down. But that's limited, essentially, to the public record. So if somebody has a phone listing, for instance, and they're in the white pages, you can find them through that, and it'll appear in Accurint. I think that there's a possibility, or if they have a mailing address, probably as we move into the future and more people have cell phones and they're not showing up in the white pages, and we're using more electronic delivery of mail, it might be harder to find folks who don't want to be found.
Is there, I would assume that with a tenant and a landlord, I guess it not necessarily for all relationships, especially a private sort of person on person rather than an apartment complex, Social Security information, can you use a Social Security number or a driver's ID number to track somebody down that way? I would think after 2.5 years that would have been tried, but you never know. Is there some other way to track somebody down by numbers of that sort, private information?
Only if you had that information in the first place. If you don't get that at the outset of the relationship, you're not going to get it at the end when you're trying to collect from someone who's essentially trying to avoid you. And that's what I think one of the themes today is, an ounce of prevention's worth a pound of cure. You want to be wise about the relationships, the legal relationships you enter into beforehand, because litigation is a very last resort. It's the last thing you want to do, because even if you do get to the very end and you've spent hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on an attorney, and you get a judgment, this situation that's been presented to us highlights exactly what I think all three of us have touched on today, that the judgment only might be worth the piece of paper it's written on, and it may have no value whatsoever, because you have to be able to collect on it. And if you can't do that, then you just not only lost the money you were out, but then you just paid an attorney a whole bunch of money that you'll never get back.
All right. That's Bob Byrne from Martin Wren with that information. I don't know. Hopefully that was helpful to our caller. Again, this is Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on WNRN. You're listening to the Ask the Attorney for some free legal information. Don't forget, this will be recorded and podcast on CVilleInformation.com. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS-FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. It is 11:57, so probably down to our last question. If someone wants to call in and bump me off, please do so, 979-0919. 877-WNRN-ROCKS. I have a question about employee-employer relationship. And can anybody tell me what the legal Virginia laws are in terms of sick and vacation pay? If you are laid off, which of those... I know that you have to pay one of them, and I can't remember whether it's sick or vacation time. And if the employer pays you as a salaried employee, can they then turn around at the end and pay it out at the hourly employee rate, which saves them money? Anyone? Anyone out there?
Bueller.
Anyone? Yeah.
That's a good question. I think lawyer's worst thing is to guess, so don't guess.
Again, it's free legal information.
Don't guess.
And as we said, do not make any official decisions based on this advice.
I think the vacation is the benefit, so I think that is what is reimbursable. But don't make any decisions based on that.
All right, so if the vacation pay is the one that's reimbursable, and you accumulate it as a salaried employee, can they then turn around and pay it out as an hourly employee to save them money?
Well, Rick, first of all, the employer-employee relationship is defined. If it's not a contract, then it's a very loosely defined relationship, and it's at will. So if it's not written down somewhere, it's certainly not. I don't know whether it's the law, the judges, the courts have said anything about it, but that is a a very specific question that would need to be researched before finding the answer to it.
All right. Bob, you look like you were going to speak up real
quick. I was
going
to say, it kind of brings us at the end to where we were in the beginning with the COBRA question, which is I think that the employer would have to be consistent. And so if they're going to treat – they need to be consistent with how they've acted in the past. And so if they have paid out on a salary basis for those benefits for other people who may have left, they need to do the same thing with this person, or else they could be facing some sort of a perceived retaliation or harassment or some sort of a claim like that. So that would be a concern I would have. But I think that what Jen's saying is right. It depends on the relationship. I don't know right off the top of my head whether that would implicate any benefits laws, but it would probably be more a contractual contractual question than it would be a statutory or regulatory one.
Thanks to all three of you for coming in today. I hope we can get you back in a year. Jessica Phillips, I promise to get the microphone that actually doesn't sway on you throughout the hour. Jennifer McKeever, Bob Byrne, Jessica Phillips, you can find them all in the phone book if you need an attorney for some legal advice. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Rick.
Thanks,
Rick. Drew Thompson up next with Les Thames Perdue.